through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Tuesday. It's Jake and Stacy. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacy Ross, producer and host Curtis Rogers on the board. Shout out Seattle Sports Saturday, as always. You know, yesterday we left before we had a chance to hear John Stanton. A lot of you guys that were still tuning in to 710 ESPN Seattle, as you should, heard it on Wyman and Bob. What you did not hear yesterday was GM Jerry DePoto and manager Scott Servais speaking with reporters. That actually happened this morning. So now, Jake,
at like 6:30 in the morning, were you up for that?
Was I up at 6:30 in the morning? I set my alarm for 6:30 and got out of bed at 8:30.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you even set your alarm at 6:30?
Because I think that optimism is a nice way to lead your day. You set a goal. You set the goal higher. If I set my alarm
for... You set the goal, but you never meet it.
If I set my alarm for 8:30, I'm getting out of bed at 10.
Gotcha.
Heretofore, you said it earlier and you get it. Doesn't matter, Jake. The point is that Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais spoke this morning. So now, you guys, we have heard from the three men, kind of not at the head of this, but the three men you're waiting to hear from: John Stanton, chairman of the Seattle Mariners, GM Jerry DePoto, and manager Scott Servais. And Jake, there's a few things that stood out to us. What was the biggest, though?
Well,
the biggest.
I mean, you know, Stacey, I think that, you know, when you looked at Jeff Passan's comments, right, or a bunch of different articles, I think there were some things that hit you in terms of management and upper management and all that, that they have a lot of work to do. But here in John Stanton's comments, there were a lot of things that he was asked about and after he had read his own statement. But there were a lot of things that really struck me, and that overall, Stanton's comments in his press conference yesterday lacked the conviction I was hoping for and that I was looking for. And here in cut number three, just to, you know, give you just a small sample size of something that he said, look, the trust between the players and the front office hasn't been completely eroded in his opinion, but players really trust Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto.
I don't think that the trust has been completely eroded. I believe that Jerry is highly respected. I believe that Scott is highly respected. And in the clubhouse, those are the two people, Scott in particular, that the players look at. I think that that's who many of the fans look to as well. Kevin's comments did not reflect the values of this organization, as I've said a couple of times already.
So as you point to, look, it hasn't completely eroded. I don't know if that's true or not.
Right.
Especially after those comments, I think the players and the fan base and everybody was kind of looking for a little bit more from John Stanton. It wasn't damaging, but his comments he made during that press conference, and damaging, what I mean, made them go even farther back. He didn't do that.
No.
It was more of, look, I'm going to answer the questions, let's get through this, and let's try and move on. But he certainly did not help the team, the players, and the fans move past this. This was an opportunity missed to make declarative statements, strong statements about the vision and conviction that you have, that the Mariners organization is working hard and is doing everything it can to make the franchise a franchise that this city deserves and can be proud of. And as I was listening to this press conference and listened to some of the comments he made, and then listened to Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais earlier this morning, it left me thinking that John Stanton is entrusting Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais to lead this organization past this, because their comments, Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais, hit very differently than John Stanton's comments did. And I just want to play a couple cuts for you, because a lot of you did not hear this. Let's go to cut number six, Jerry DePoto talking about how he talked with many of the team leaders on Sunday night.
I spent Sunday evening making phone calls. I touched base with a number of our leaders, some of the players who were specifically cited in the comments that Kevin made. And I talked to our clubhouse leadership group about what we are, what we've created here together, especially over these last two or three seasons, you know, with Marco, with James Paxton, with Kyle Seager. I did speak with Julio Rodriguez. And, you know, shared the efforts with Scott. He spoke with other players, and our players understand that Kevin's comments do not define who we are.
And so now he's going out and saying, look, this is an isolated incident. We're talking to the players. I'm reaching out to the players. We are better connected to the thought process, the mindset of where our players are at and how we're going to move forward. Then go to Scott Servais here in cut number 12, the manager of the Mariners, talking about how, quite frankly, he's angry and embarrassed.
The last 2 days have been extremely difficult for everybody in our organization, players, coaches, staff, all employees. Everyone that's got pride in being a Mariner was hurt by the inaccurate comments that were made. And for me personally, I got to say, I was very angry. I was embarrassed. And I'm frustrated. And I'm frustrated because I know how hard we are working as a group. Coaches, strength coaches, players, front office, and everybody involved. How hard we're working to create a culture that we're proud of.
Now, one more, cut number 15, Scott Servais says, our culture that we've built within this locker room on the baseball side of things, he believes it's strong enough to get past this.
Our culture is strong enough to withstand all this because our culture has shifted a little bit, and it's shifted in a very positive way. I've made the comment in the past, I believe that average teams are led by managers and coaches. Elite teams are led by the players. Our culture has shifted now where our players are holding each other accountable. The bar has been raised, and there's a certain standard here when you walk into our clubhouse. And I give our players, I give a ton of credit to our veteran players.
So everything that I heard from Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais, I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the conviction and the conversations that I wish John Stanton would have had with in his press conference. But again, I come back to that thought that sometimes you have owners that have different roles and different strengths, and we're still trying to figure out. I believe I like John Stanton, local guy, had a chance to meet him, and I think that he really truly wants to turn the Mariners into a winner, and that he is excited about that and motivated to make that happen. I also think that he recognizes sometimes that his strength's probably not a press conference. It's probably not addressing this city the way that we're accustomed to. It wasn't Paul Allen's strength either, and he left that to Pete Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And so John Stanton might be passing that torch on to Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais and saying, hey, you guys are the ones that are going to have to take the mantle of this and help us get out of this mess and make the connections that unfortunately that we broke as upper management. And we are trusting you guys to help us get past this from a baseball operations standpoint.
See, unfortunately, Jake, I don't think that's enough. I don't, because one thing that makes this issue, what Kevin Mather did, uniquely difficult to handle for the Seattle Mariners is when you tell players, when you tell fans, these comments are reflective of one person and not the organization, how easy is it for them to believe that, or larger communities to believe that, who were also offended? Because this wasn't just any person. This isn't a coach. This isn't a player. This isn't, a social media person that tweeted something from the team account that should have been from their personal account. This is the president and CEO, or rather was. He has since resigned. This is someone who sounded very much like he was involved with baseball operations and someone that has knowledge of a larger plan. So normally these guys are more behind the scenes. It is not frequent that us as sports fans, as sports commentators, are sitting here talking about the president or CEO of a baseball team. Most baseball fans, this isn't a knock on knowledge, can't name every single member of upper tier, upper level management within a baseball team. Those guys and women are behind the scenes, right? These aren't the people that are in front of the camera that are making game day decisions, or even sometimes baseball operations decisions on a regular daily basis.
Yeah.
But these are people that are often involved with bigger plans, which is why take the service time conversation about Kelenic and Logan Gilbert as an example. It is hard for a lot of fans, and I would imagine, I'm not speaking for them, but I would imagine for Kelnick and Gilbert to hear that that is only reflective of Kevin Mather when he is someone that would presumably be involved in those bigger conversations about big contracts.
100%.
And so I think that this is an opportunity where, you know, if I was speaking with John Stanton, I would say, look, I recognize that you're the chairman of the Mariners and you are not someone that is going to ace every single public speaking event, every single PR nightmare. But something like this, cut 25, when you're asked whether or not you would have fired Mather had he not resigned and you said this.
I didn't have to make that decision. I came in this morning and Kevin resigned. I believe that that's the right answer for the organization.
I would have said, John, you seem like a good person. You seem like someone that cares about this team very deeply. You need to be stronger in that answer than that. Mm-hmm. With this specific example, with this PR nightmare that you guys are now in, you need to more publicly commit to fixing a culture. And there was a lot of stuff written about this entire situation in the hours and now day or two that have followed. One of my favorites was, unsurprisingly, ESPN's Jeff Passan, a favorite of our station in general. He's wonderful. And he has a line in his article he wrote for ESPN, which is, this is how bad culture takes root. Now, what he's talking about is referencing Mather being promoted and staying within the organization after sexual harassment complaints were filed in 2009 and 10, and then clearly after that story became public in 2018. So I don't want to broaden the scope and make the assumption that there are multiple bad parties in upper-level Mariners management and ownership. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that there is a public perception when you do not emphatically shut down stuff like this, that it is a deep-rooted problem.
And I agree with that, full-heartedly. And that's why I believe, ultimately, if you're going to leave it up to Jerry DePoto and Scott Surface, you're going to create a division, a fracturing within your organization. I think Jerry DePoto and Scott Surface have done an outstanding job throughout this rebuilding process. Been a huge fan, and I'm excited about what they can continue to do, and they will be the right guys to lead through that process on that side of things. But they need somebody to connect the dots between upper management and the trust within this organization for the players and for this city and fan base. And although John Stanton may not have chosen to make declarative statements and to essentially just get through the press conference yesterday, just try and get through it. But what he does need to do, he does need to make a declarative statement, a definitive statement with who he appoints as the next president of the Mariners moving forward. If you want to get your fan base and everybody else on board and a signal that you are committed to making this franchise better and great, then you're going to have to go outside of what is currently going on within your own Mariners organization, hiring outside to fill that president void and do it with someone that has some big, I would say, a hallmark name, as someone who has great background in turning franchises around into a winner. Curtis, you had pointed out that over the history, over the 20-year history that this Mariners organization has really struggled, they haven't really gone out and hired anybody that has been the darling of Major League Baseball or that has gone on to get other jobs even after this, that they were desired by everybody else or well thought of. And I think that that has to change in with this hire.
Yeah, the front office people, the presidents, the board of directors, all those guys. It's always been, you know, Chuck Armstrong, Howard Lincoln, John Ellis, John Stanton, Kevin Mather. It's always been those guys. And there has not been any sort of wavering in that, even with the ownership transition that happened a few years ago. Many of those guys are still around the organization in some capacity or another. So it's always been them promoting from within, And where has that gotten you? There has not been a significant culture change at that level of the organization. Now, I think there is one going on with the player development, with DePoto and Service and what they've been able to do with this farm system and where the direction of the on-field product is going. But ultimately, the organization is going to mimic those at the top. It is going to mirror the direction from those people. And as we're seeing right now, it's leaving plenty to be desired.
All right, we're going to be continuing this conversation. Jake, do you know what time it is?
I do know what time it is, but I someone asked here real quick before we throw to it. 509 said, who would that person be? Who would be that person at the present level that you could hire? And the one name that's out there right now, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other names that will pop up as this conversation continues. But Theo Epstein, to me, is the guy that right now, if I looked at it, and I'm the Mariners, I'm John Stanton, I don't care what the price tag is. Unfortunately, Kevin Mather spilled the beans on the fact that financially you guys are doing okay after this year. So money shouldn't be an object in this. You have to make a declarative statement with who you hire and who you put in that position to connect upper management and baseball operations. And I think if you made a hire like that and you brought in Theo Epstein, that would build a lot of trust, and it would be a show of commitment that you really value this franchise, that you really value this fan base, and that you're doing everything you possibly can to make this a winner again.
Now, do you know what time it is?
I do. Yes, it's three questions.
It's time for three questions. Brought to you by Thielen Moorridge.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question one, would it be worth it for the Seahawks to bring back Josh Gordon in 2021 and play that waiting game again?
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm good on that one. I believe that at this point in time, let's not play games. Unless you definitively know Josh Gordon's situation, that he's going to come back, I do not want to do this all over again. I'm tired of seeing the questions come in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line about Josh Gordon and is he going to come back, is he not, what's the latest update? We don't know. None of us know. And that's the hard part about Josh Gordon's situation, is that the NFL, through the substance abuse policy, and rightfully so, they protect the individual player and don't give out information as to their progress or what's going on. Timelines being set, none of it. It is all kept under wraps. And so for that very reason, I believe it's time for the Seahawks to move on from Josh Gordon and to start really figuring out other legitimate options, guys that can be reliable and be there that you know is going to be on the team for 16 games. That, to me, has got to be the priority for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I think Josh Gordon clearly had, I don't know what the current relationship is, but had a relationship with the Seattle Mariner, or excuse me, no, the Seattle Seahawks, where they were his preferred destination. He would openly talk about wanting to come back to Seattle, being excited about being back with the Seahawks. I just think at this point, it's like, look, that will have been the third time with your team alone that you're waiting to see what happens there. I think, you know, I want the best for Josh, who by all accounts, a great person. Like, I haven't heard like necessarily a bad thing about his character from being in this locker room. I hope for the best for him. I think that your team needs to find someone that can be there week one for you.
Number two.
Is Seattle's number one tight end for the 2021 season currently on the roster?
It's a good question. I have high hopes and faith in guys like Will Dissly and Colby Parkinson. I really think that Parkinson actually has a chance to come out and have a really strong year this year with the addition of Shane Waldron as offensive coordinator and his ability to use tight ends. And Colby Parkinson at 6'7", 250 pounds, brings something a little bit different that this team hasn't had in a little while. But I do think tight end number one is not on this roster right now. I have to imagine that there are some other guys out there that they will be interested in bringing in that won't necessarily be high price tag type of players. But Gerald Everett, to me, would make a lot of sense tight end with the Rams. He's now a free agent. They're not going to be able to retain him, bring him back, from my understanding. And if you're Shane Waldron and trying to hire somebody that knows your system intimately and can make that transition and is someone that could be a mismatch, I think Gerald Everett could be one. And the other thing, too, is the 206 said, no, it's Zach Ertz. We want to unleash Curtis again.
Oh, don't do that to me, 206.
But, yeah. here's the thing about Zach Ertz. They will not trade for him. If he ever was cut, I have to imagine that the Seahawks would be interested in having conversations with Ertz. I don't think that they'd be willing to pay the high price tag that Ertz would be looking for. So I that's why I think that tight end number one is not on the roster currently.
Yeah, and I don't know if it necessarily gets solved. Like, some of the names they might have available at a low cost in free agency are going to be guys that are a little bit older. You're going to have basically maybe a cheaper Greg Olsen situation. So I'm not entirely sure what they do there. I mean, it is a piece of an explosive offense that they are missing. And I don't think he's on the roster right now. Although I would love to see Will Dissly or Jacob Hollister continue to evolve. They have to show a little bit more. And in Jacob Hollister's case, he's an unrestricted free agent, right? So you've got to make sure you at least bring him back if that's who you're hoping on.
Number three.
Bit of a wild card here for question three. 20 Ooh. Years ago this weekend was the Nisqually earthquake. What were you doing when it hit?
Falls City Elementary School.
Now, you were a baby.
No, Falls City Elementary School. Was that, Curtis, we're the same grade, so would that have been fourth or fifth grade?
Fourth grade,
yeah.
I was in sixth grade.
I vividly remember.
Old.
Yeah. Vividly remember it happening, getting under my desk, and then looking over and seeing a book off the bookcase just fall on this kid next to me.
Oh,
and the
no!
kid acted like he had died. It didn't even hit him hard. He was just crying for no reason.
Jake, you don't know that. Maybe it did hit him hard.
No.
Was it a hardcover book?
I mean, yeah, but...
Jake, I think you're being a bully right now.
I don't think so. I remember vividly...
You were like, there's no sitting, crying in earthquake.
As I was sitting under the desk, as it was shaking, just thinking, man, this kid's a wuss.
I remember thinking that I was in sixth grade. My first thought was that someone maybe walked into the room and the room was shaking. And I was like, no, that doesn't make sense. Then I thought maybe they have things underneath the school. Again, I'm in sixth grade, that are moving it and we're in a drill and they're like, these things don't occur to you that it's real when you're younger. And I remember being under the desk and talking to this kid, Flynn. I don't know what happened to Flynn. Flynn, I hope you're well. We shared a nice moment there chatting about
the earth
snacks.
Get him that day?
Did he
just
fall
open up
into
and he's
the...
gone?
No, he made it.
That's good.
Yeah. Then I got to go home.
Yeah, fourth grade, I was leaning back in my chair during silent reading, just being the bad boy of the classroom at that moment. And then the way the building started shaking, it tilted me forward rather than backwards.
Whoa!
So got lucky and then dove underneath my desk.
Now, I have a kind of a dumb question. Was anyone outside when this happened? Someone said Stacy was in college when the earthquake happened. Can you see... Does the ground look like a wave, kind of? Like, do you see it kind of moving?
I would imagine so.
I don't know. I was inside, and I don't have a clear enough memory to remember what anything looked like.
Well, that's what happens.
I only remember Flynn.
When you get to old age, you start to forget things like that.
Stop.
And then when you fall on the stairs, you get memory loss as well.
That's right. It's okay.
It's not okay. I want to ask Mike Salk. Now, well... He might not have been here.
He was not here.
He was not here.
No.
So he doesn't have any memory of this.
None.
Okay. Well, instead of asking him about the Nisqually earthquake, I'm going to ask him what he thought about DePoto and Service's comments this morning. We have some new updates on the Kevin Mather situation. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We're joined now by Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. I was going to ask you what we talked about 5 minutes ago, which is what you remember from the Nisqually earthquake. And then Curtis informed me that you were in Boston.
They didn't live here then.
So then I thought, well...
Was that like 1990 something?
It was 2000.
Yeah,
I didn't live
and
there.
And then I was like,
I was in California.
Maybe I'll ask him if he felt the earthquake.
I've only felt a couple earthquakes in my life. I was in L.A. for them.
What's the biggest one?
Not huge. Honestly, I wasn't in L.A. for any big earthquake. One woke us up in the middle of the night while I was at college at Pomona. And, I mean, it's terrifying. I woke up and we all went outside. It was the night before Pedro Martinez took on Roger Clemens in the 1999 ALDS. And I was convinced somehow that this epic battle of good versus evil had culminated in the earth opening up and there being mass carnage somewhere. So earthquakes are scary. They're loud, too. Like, you hear, like,
yeah.
I remember sitting in my house for just a little baby earthquake, and you heard, like, this whack. I was like, I thought somebody had run into our garage, like, with their car.
It's always, you always think irrational things. I was telling Jake and Curtis, again, 5 minutes ago, that I thought someone walked into the room, and maybe it was shaking the room.
Yeah.
I also thought one time when I got stung by a bee at night that I was stung by a scorpion. We don't have to talk about this. We're getting into some weird territory. It wasn't just yesterday. Did you hear Jerry DePoto and Scott Service this morning?
I did, yeah, and I think they're well within their rights to be pretty upset.
Well, and I thought they did a much better job.
I did, too. I mean, look, they're better at PR than John Stanton is. Yeah. It's more of what they do. And I read a lot of the criticism yesterday of Stanton and the way he handled that presser. I mean, technical issues aside, once they got into it. Look, that's not a strength. Mm-hmm. And I don't care whether that's a strength. I don't need John Stanton to be a PR wizard.
Right.
What I need is for action to take place now. And Brock and I recorded the podcast this morning. And I guess the number one thing that I wanted to talk about was this is an opportunity to move forward. I know that what's happened is awful. And we went through some of the ways in which it was. And everyone has sort of taken their pound of flesh now in terms of the things that bothered them the most from the 45-minute call. But this is such an opportunity for the Mariners to change their culture, or at the very least change the way it's viewed by the rest of the world. Prove to everybody that you truly care most about winning. This is an opportunity. And by the way, it's an opportunity to make changes where they need to be made. To me, this could be an opportunity to change your team colors, to change your uniform, to change your name, to change your president, to change the way you do business, to truly invest. And I think that they have to understand this. The right CEO will help them spend the money to make the money. So I view this as a tremendous opportunity for them. Baseball in general, I'm not saying the Mariners, but baseball in general has always been this old boys club. And I believe that many of the most successful organizations have been ones who were able to break free of that mentality, think beyond it, think progressively. I don't mean politically progressively. I mean in terms of new thoughts and trying to keep up with progress.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an unbelievable opportunity now for the Mariners that has been handed to them to go think differently, mm-hmm. and go be on the cutting edge of what's possible. So I don't care what John Stanton said yesterday. I absolutely care what happens next, who they hire, and how they move forward.
And how I phrased it earlier before you came on is, look, the choice was to go through this press conference and not make any big, bold, declarative mm-hmm. statements by John Stanton. But what you're saying and how I feel is that he absolutely needs to go out and make a declarative statement with who he appoints as the
by
next
action.
CEO.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
Because right now what he's done is he's actually put this in a position where, and I think it's smart to some degree, is put this on the lap of Jerry DePoto and Scott Service to help get them through some of this from a baseball operations standpoint. It's the reason why they're in the position they are, or that there's any reason or was reason to be excited. Jerry DePoto's vision of rebuilding mm-hmm. this and retooling and making the trades and bringing this, you know, people that he wanted to be a part of this. But what you're going to end up doing is you're going to end up fracturing upper management from the baseball operations side. And that's what Stacy was pointing out in a big way, and that's why this is such an important hire.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity, and you start thinking about names. Look, Theo Epstein's name is going to come up. He's the moonshot, and if you're John Stanton, you are doing a disservice to your organization if you don't call. You got to call. You have to call Theo
Absolutely.
Epstein and say, what does it take? That is call number one. It has to be. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who, you know, who learned from Larry Lucchino and turned around the Red Sox. Not that obviously they had a lot of advantages, but he took a problematic franchise in a lot of ways and turned it into a winner. He did the same things with the Cubs. I mean, like you owe it to everybody to start with Theo and see if he's willing to, you know, finish off his 86-year curse, but then the Cubs curse, and then come break a 20-year playoff drought. Yeah, you owe it to Theo to make that call. Now, What is it? Does he want to have a hand in baseball ops? What does that mean for DePoto? It gets complicated in a hurry. There are plenty of other names, and I have no issues with them turning towards more of a business ops person rather than a baseball ops person to be the CEO. I mean, that's what that is a perfectly valid strategy that works for many of the best teams in baseball. So you don't need it all to be concentrated in a baseball person. The right kind of CEO figures out the business side of things and gives the power to the baseball side to go do its baseball operations as well as it possibly can. So there are some interesting creative names out there, and just calling around a little bit, not from the Mariners. I've heard some interesting ones. Brian Ald, who is the president of the Tampa Bay Rays, his name will come up, really smart West Coast guy who's living in Tampa. Another name that I think is really interesting is a guy named Chris Park, who's been an executive VP with baseball, is currently running as a CEO of an esports company called Gen G or something like that, who's another West Coast guy, has worked for Facebook, has been here in Seattle. There's a lot of ways you can go, but be creative. Think outside the box. Think of someone who can truly bring your organization into a new world. And I just view this as an opportunity to completely think differently and get closer to your goal. Because if you're a baseball team, as a fan, I only have one goal: win the World Series. Everything else, I don't care what it is. Well, I understand they need to make money in order to win the World Series. That those things need to go together. Fine. Bring in the right creative person who can keep goal number one, win the World Series, in mind while giving everybody else what they need along the way.
What do you think about the idea people have of either in order to do right by Kelenic or Gilbert, you have them break camp with the team?
Yeah, we talked about that. I don't think you have to have them break camp. I think one issue they may have here is they may be they may have a union grievance filed against them if they don't.
Sure.
I mean, they got a pretty decent case at least to be made there. So I don't think they need to break camp. I think you need to give them an open and honest and fair shot at it. Look, Kelenic's young and he's barely spent any time in the minors. If he's not ready, then he's not ready. But the idea that he's going to be ready 20 days later, that doesn't fly. If Jared Kelenic doesn't break camp with the team, then you got to keep him down long enough for him to actually develop, because the goal here is development. But if he's ready April 1st, let's go. Bring it on, man. Give me Jared Kelenic. Give me Gilbert. As soon as they're ready, they're ready. But don't push it just to prove a point with the union. That doesn't work either.
You guys have your new episode of the Brock and Sock podcast. Did you have anything to talk about today?
There's a lot of this, and there's some really good stuff in there. And I'll tell you, I won't tell you what it is now, but if you go listen, there is one quote in that transcript, in that video from Kevin Mather that really stuck with me in a negative way. And I haven't really
just
heard
one?
Well, there's a many.
There's a lot.
But there was one that jumped out that I thought was very indicative and hasn't gotten talked about a little bit. So
is it the parking garage comment?
It is related to the parking garage, yeah. That one really bothered me.
Me too.
Yeah.
There was a lot that bothered me more, but I think when it got to that point, I was like, there's something about it
feels like taking advantage of the fans.
Yes.
And it really stuck with me in a negative way and bothered me afterwards. So we had a lot of that, and then some good Russ conversation in there as well.
All right. BrockandSockPodcast.com. I want to fit in just 10 seconds of breaking news, a story that we're tracking, nothing to do with Seattle, but given that it is a major star national story from the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Tiger Woods was involved in a single vehicle accident in L.A. County. So this, according to the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, he had to be extricated from the wreck with the jaws of life. A scary, scary situation. It sounds like he, though, is maybe not okay, but he's been transported to a local hospital by ambulance for injuries. So if there are any major updates on this story, we'll be keeping you guys posted. Obviously, it's Tiger Woods, so it's a major, major story. So we will be watching this for you guys and obviously hoping for the best for Woods in a very scary situation. He is Mike Salk, again, brought to you by Jeffco Plumbing and Sewer. Thanks so much, Mike.
See ya.
All right. Now, we've heard a lot about hometown discounts, something players should definitely do. But guess what? It's absolutely not something KJ Wright should do. Never in a million years. I'll tell you why next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. We're talking about Seahawks free agents every single weekday leading up to free agency. We were going to get to Shaquille Griffin yesterday. Obviously, there was some breaking news with the resignation of Kevin Mather, then statements from John Stanton and all of that. So that got pushed back to today. So today, we will be talking about Shaquille Griffin. There is another free agent, KJ Wright. We've already previewed him as part of our series, but there's some updates here. So KJ Wright, I have no idea why, is getting a little bit of flack from people for saying that he would not be willing to take a discount, and he has every right not to take a discount and can back that up with stats. But let's go hear it. Let's go ahead and listen and cut number 17 to what he had to say.
No, man, I do way too much on the football field to take a discount. That makes absolutely no sense. Like, if you want to, you know, win all these championships and, you know, look good on Sundays, you got to compensate your guys that are making plays. And like you said earlier, nobody, you know, had double-digit TFLs and PBUs in the NFL. So I have a family, and I'm trying to, you know, set up long-term success for my family.
TFL, obviously, tackle for loss. KJ Wright had 11 of them last year, which is just one less than the career high 12 he had in 2016 when he was a Pro Bowler. He had 86 combined tackles, which isn't the most of his career, but also it's only 1 year after he did have the most of his career with 132. Both of those numbers, the 11 tackles for loss, the 132 tackles, have happened after he turned 30 years old with the Seattle Seahawks, which is a number, as we know, Jake, that in the NFL, people, whether it be some fans, whether it be GMs, whatever it is, people start to question your production on the field and, unfairly or not, start expecting you to take lower deals. Now, there are some guys that start to drop off. We see this a lot with running backs, not every running back, but you do see it with some positions that drop off a little sooner than others. I think KJ Wright would tell you that linebacker is not one of those positions, but how do you feel about people saying, hey, KJ, you should take a hometown discount?
Well, I get that from a fan perspective. Of course you want KJ Wright to take a hometown discount. You want every player to take a hometown discount. You want every player to not take the contract that they are worth or that they deserve. It's just what you do as a fan. You're always going to side with the team. But as a player, You're going to go out for your own individual interests, because that's the way this business works. The NFL famously is known for, NFL stands for not for long. And you have a finite amount of time to make money. The amount of money that can be generational changing type of money. And you have to do everything in your power to be able to take advantage of the time that you have, that your body can hold up through a period of time, to make it all happen. And guess what? KJ Wright, at this stage of his career, has given everything to Seattle. He has given everything to this community, has been a stalwart, has been a leader, has been a lot of positive things in this community. He doesn't owe anybody to take a hometown discount at this stage of his career. And I have no problem with KJ Wright going out and advocating for himself publicly about it. And the thing is that KJ Wright, two things can be true. He wants to make as much money as possible and take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of him, and then also still want to be in Seattle. I saw him very active on Twitter yesterday as this came out, commenting on a bunch of different people who are saying he's aging, slowing down, whether, you know, he should stay, whether he should take a hometown discount, all these different things. And he responded to all these different people. And one of the things that stood out to me was KJ Wright saying, hey, now, just because I want money doesn't mean that the Seahawks can't give it to me. They can get creative with how they do this. And so it always, from a fan perspective, is going to fall on the player to take the brunt of responsibility to take that hometown discount. It's never fair to the player. That's just the way that this game is set up. And the reality, though, is, Stacey, is I believe for KJ Wright's position, is the market is going to determine what that quote-unquote hometown discount is going to be like. The reality is, as you pointed out, he's 31, he's going to be 32 years old. He transitioned from being a Will linebacker to Sam linebacker, and he played that extremely well. But he now has become a situational linebacker, a first, second down type of linebacker instead of being an every down linebacker. Those types of guys, no matter how productive you are, don't get paid top dollar. And so I believe personally that KJ Wright's contract will probably be less than what he got in the open market even last time around when he was coming off of a bum knee, just because of the age, because of the position change and all those things. That's why I've said from the very beginning, I think KJ Wright's price tag will be reasonable for the franchise to bring him back if they want to.
Now, KJ Wright, for his part, does seem very interested in coming back to Seattle. And cut number 16, he explains why he'd love to end his career here.
Yeah, I mean, that would just be a beautiful story. If I could just ride it all out with the Seahawks, you know, that's some legendary type stuff. And like I said before I left, I believe that it would be a great investment for Seattle to, you know, to keep me. Because as you've seen, since I've been here, we've been nothing but, you know, awesome. Always looking to the playoffs. You know, winning our division, and so they know how much I want to be here. But at the end of the day, I get it. When I've been looking at the salary cap, they got to, you know, clear some space to make things happen, and so they got to get busy.
Now, he's right. I mean, the Seahawks are in a tough salary cap situation. Now, the salary cap is a lot more flexible than sometimes we give it credit for being, right? I mean, the salary cap is not just money you have this year, it's money you have in contracts tied up with long-term players over the next couple years, meaning there's some restructuring you can often do. There are some maneuvers you can take to create far more space. It's not just
Correct.
What you have available, not tied up in current contracts.
Correct. It's and as KJ's pointing out, it's not just on the player. It's on the organization as well to figure this out. If they want to keep KJ Wright, then they have to figure out ways to make it happen. It is not one-sided here. And so I think that from a player's perspective, which I'm generally always going to have, it is really difficult to be in this position as a free agent and hear repeatedly over and over and over again after you've given 10 years of everything to this organization. Oh, come on, man. Give us the hometown discount. Come on. Let's finish your career. There was nothing you'd want more, but at the same to finish your career in Seattle if you're KJ Wright.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you're not going to be taken advantage of. You're not going to be disrespected because he's earned that right, and he has earned the right to be paid what he deserves and what the market sets. And for him to take something less, I think for him is disrespectful to what he has brought to this organization at this stage and time. And like I said before, I don't think that KJ is going to get some crazy amount on the open market. He didn't last time around either. And that was when he was a Will linebacker. Now he's a Sam linebacker who's playing on first and second down in certain situations. And so I think that it will be a reasonable price tag for the Seahawks to bring back KJ Wright. And to his credit, after that knee injury, he's had two mm-hmm. very, very productive years here in Seattle and has been a great leader for this organization. And so I would love to be able to bring back KJ Wright. I thought when he made that transition from Sam linebacker, not only did his proven play, but he became more aggressive again. He became a guy who didn't kind of – him and Bobby have a unique technique at Mike and Will linebacker where they kind of wait – to see the play develop, and then they shoot the gap, and then they go and respond. When he played Sam linebacker, you saw him play more of the ilk of what he was younger in his career, attacking right at the beginning of the play. And that's because that's what that position requires at Sam linebacker. You have to set the edge. You have to be aggressive. You have to do a lot of those things, and he was great at it. And so if I'm the Seahawks and I want to try and keep this band together as much as possible, I think KJ Wright's a big piece to that. But Curtis, in our show prep, you had pointed out you don't want them to bring back KJ Wright if it means what?
If it costs you a chance at a quality offensive lineman. If the price tag for adding a left guard or a center is equal to that of KJ Wright and you don't have any more spending flexibility, take the offensive lineman 10 times out of 10.
Mm. And I do have to say I agree with you there. It's a very difficult decision. I don't think they need to be put in that position. They have plenty of ability to be flexible with their cap and the way they can make this work. But I'm in the thought process of Curtis. If that's where you're at, then you have to make that decision for the offensive line. But I would love to see KJ right back here in Seattle.
All right, 10 seconds of a story that we'll be updating all day. Tiger Woods involved in a single vehicle car crash in Los Angeles County. There's an update from his agent. Tiger Woods currently sustained multiple leg injuries and is in surgery at a local hospital. So we'll be giving you guys updates at that as that becomes available. Obviously a major national sports news story there today. ESPN's Tim Kirkjian joins us next. I want to ask him what Kevin Mather's comments, any impact they could have on CBA negotiations later this year. That's next.